This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Interaction between these two powers, as we discussed last week, that Adam and Chava on the one hand and the snake on the other hand, were two powers. That while they did have a physical form, if we're going to define a physical form as something that can be sensed, something that can be seen, something that can be touched, yes, they did have a physical form, but the physical form of Adam and Chava was not quite as we know it today, as our physical form. It was less physical, because there are degrees in physicality. You can have a being that is 100% totally spiritual, and the only being that is 100% totally spiritual is Hashem. Even the angels already have some degree of physicality. They have some degree of physical form. And Adam and Chava had more physical form. But as we learned last week in the Zohar, their physical form was that of fire. They were formed of energy, not of matter. And back to our old theme of relativity, there is a close relationship between energy and matter. Energy is already a physical form. Energy is a material form. But it's less material than matter. So just as energy can be transformed into matter, so the spiritual can be transformed into energy. And that's in fact what occurred in the case of Adam and Chava. They were physical beings, but their physicality manifested as energy, not as matter. So you could see them, they were fire. You could feel them, but you felt the heat. You couldn't touch them in the normal physical kind of sense. They were fire, they were made of ash. Likewise, when the Torah says the snake was orum v'hanochosh orum hayo orum mikol chayas hasode, that the snake was orum is normally translated as sly, which is of course one of its meaning in this context. But the Zohar learned that there's another meaning in this context, and that is orum. He also had no physical form. He was one of those mazikim that was created late on Friday, and Hashem didn't finish him off, didn't give him a physical form. So the snake at this point is also not a spiritual force entirely. He's also come into some kind of physical formation, but not a complete physical formation. He doesn't have a body. So you have two forces, the force of Adam and the force of the snake, interacting here for the first time. And the last verse before the introduction of the snake is Vayu shnehem arumim ha'odom ve'ishtoi ve'lo yisboi shoshu, that Adam and his wife were both naked and they had no shame. And we discussed that last week, why one might have thought they should have had shame and why they didn't in fact have shame. The Chazal say on this, the relationship between this statement followed immediately by the introduction of the snake is that not only were Adam and Ishtoi naked at this particular point, that they had no clothes, but they were in fact engaged in the sexual act at that time. So here again, difficult to understand but not impossible to understand, although they had no bodies in the physical form that we know bodies, they had bodies of fire, they had bodies of energy. And they were involved in sexuality that of whatever nature that was possible at that time. We discussed last week that there was great intimacy that was possible, and there was great physicality, there was great sexuality that was possible, but not sensuality. And the snake noticed this. The snake actually saw this. They didn't do it in private. There was nothing that they were ashamed of. So the snake was able to watch them. And in watching them, he got very jealous. And he decided, this looks too good. Interestingly, therefore, that the snake that is unbridled sensuality, as we learned him last week, the nochash is unbridled sensuality, watches two beings who are almost not physical at all, who are so great that the angels mistook them for Hashem himself. They are so spiritual. Their forcefulness is such that the manifestation of their physicality is in energy rather than in matter. And the snake that is all of sensuality watches these two spiritual beings involved in a sexual relationship, and he gets jealous. What does that tell us? One has here the introductions to some of the very basics of sexuality. And it tells us that the nature of sexual ecstasy able to be attained by the introduction of spirituality and intellect and sense and thought and sensitivity is far, far greater than the sexuality able to be attained by pure sensuality. Here you've got the Nachash that has nothing but sensuality. And you have Adam and Chava who have everything but sensuality. And sensuality looks at Adam and Chava and he says, my goodness, I want some of this too. This is just too good to be true. Can't believe it. That people are capable of that level of ecstasy. It's often thought that the higher levels of spiritual achievement detach people more and more from physical experience. And that isn't so. When Chazal say, Kol ha-godol mechaveru yitzrei godol hemena, that as a person becomes greater, so does his yetzer, that is because, on the contrary, his ability to find physical pleasure, to find pleasure in the physical things of life, is intensified, not decreased. As he becomes spiritually more attuned and spiritually more sensitive, he's able to find more physical pleasure or more pleasure in the physical things of life than the person on the lower levels. And that's a particularly Jewish idea, that's a particularly Torah idea, opposed to many of the other religions, nearly all of the other religions that assume the opposite. And here we see the beginnings of this, here we see the origins of this, that the snake, sensuality, is jealous of the quality of relationship that Adam and Chava are able to attain. And therefore he gets to work to try and participate in this area. So whereas today, or any time after the Chet, it's the Yetzer Hara is really the human being trying to get a slice of sensuality. In this case, the Yetzer Hara was sensuality trying to get a slice of spirituality. And we still have that. There's still the concept of the Sitra Achra trying to get a slice of things spiritual. One finds that in Kabbalah many times. The one time one finds it is on Yom Kippur, on the Avodas Yom Kippur, where we have two similar goats. One becomes a korban and one is Azazel, one is sent into the desert. And we're told, Chazal tell us in the Kabbalah it's brought, that one is to give the Sitra Achra his share of the spiritual experience. Yom Kippur is so spiritual that the Sitra Achra also wants, that evil force wants a part of it, and we give him a part of it, so as to keep him away from it. There are various cases where it's brought, that there is a need sometimes to feed the Sitra Achra from the very highest spiritual sources of nourishment. And so here's too, we see this force of sensuality, the Nachash, wanting to participate somehow in the spiritual intimacy that Adam and Chava are able to achieve. V'hanochosh, so let's read through this and see how he handles it. V'hanochosh hoyo orum mikol chayas hasode, asher oso Hashem elikim. The snake was, now let's read it the simple way, was more sly than any of the animals of the field that Hashem had created. Vayomer el ha'isha, and he said to the woman, Afki omar elokim lo yisoichlu mikol eitz hagon. Did Hashem in fact tell you not to eat from any of the trees? Vatoimer ha'isha el hanochosh, and the woman said to the nochash, Mipri eitz hagon noichel. No, not at all. On the contrary, Hashem said we're free to eat from the trees, from the fruit of the trees of the garden. Umipri ha'itz asher b'soich hagon omar elokim lo yisoichlu b'menu. It's only from the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden that Hashem said don't eat from it, v'lo sig uboy, and don't touch it, pen tamusun, lest you will die. Vayomer hanochosh el ha'isha, and the snake said to the woman, loy mois tamusun, that's not true, you will not die. Not correct. Ki yodei elokim, it's only that Hashem knows, ki v'yoyim acholchem imenu v'nifkichu anechem, that if you in fact eat from this tree, your eyes will become open. V'yisem keilukim yodei tevero, and you'll be like Hashem, knowing good and bad. V'atere ha'isho ki tev ha'etz lamachol, and the woman saw that the tree looked very good to eat. V'chisavo hu le'inayim, and that it was a pleasure to look at. V'nechmad ha'etz lahaskil, and the tree would certainly do good to become wise. Batikach mipirio batoichal, and she took from its fruit and she ate. Batitein gam leisho imo vayoichal, and he gave also to, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. Batipo kachno enei shnehem, and they did in fact, their eyes did in fact open. Vayedu ki erumim haim, and that manifested immediately by them realizing that they were naked and then now no longer feeling shameless about that. Vayispiru alei se'eino, and they sewed a fig leaf into a item of clothing. Vayasu lohem chagiros, and they made for themselves girdles. Let's take it up to there and try and analyze what on earth went on here. What is this Eitz Hadas Tova Ra firstly? The Sifuna talks about the Eitz Hadas as a fruit which is Mesi Loses Lev El HaTova Hara. It brings a person to become involved in matters of good and bad. Umizeh V'hodom Yodo Noson Lev Olel. Umizeh Nikro HaKorav Meido. Komra Meido Li'ishu Shedako Loses Lev T'tzokhi Krovo. The Sipuna points out that the word yodea or das in Hebrew, certainly in the Torah, doesn't only mean knowledge, it means intimacy of knowledge. And that's why when it talks about Odom and Chava having relations, it talks about the Odom yodo es Chava ishto, he knew her in the most intimate way. So Eitz Hadas is not just knowledge in a detached sense, it's not information. Eitz Hadas is deep intuitive knowledge. And the Eitz Hadas toivara means it brings one into intimacy with the subject of good and evil. And the Sipuna goes on to say, Livchoir ho arev afapi shiyozik velimis habilti arev afapi shiyoyim. The Sipuna here takes a very similar line as does the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim, and he says that until the time of eating from the Eitz Hadas, there was a natural distaste for bad and a natural taste for good. There was no difference between pleasant and good and between unpleasant and bad. Anything good was pleasant and anything bad was unpleasant. After eating from the Eitz Hadas, there became the possibility of experiencing pleasantness from bad things. That was the first time that became possible. That something could be delicious, even though it was bad for you. That wasn't so beforehand. That's how the Sipuna learns it. The Reb Chaim Volozhin and the Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Aleph learns it slightly differently. He says, "Ki das perush hischabrus ki yadua." Knowledge is, the word das is intimacy, it's connectedness. So he says the same thing. Shenischabru v'nisarvu besoichoy uvoheliyonos hatoy v'hora yachad ze betoy ze mamish. Good and bad became intimately and inextricably involved with one another. Before the eating from Eitz Hadas, good and bad were two poles apart. It was very clear. What was good and what was bad, and there was no grey area in between. It was black and there was white, there was good and there was bad, and that was it. Once he had eaten from Eitz Hadas, good and bad became involved with one another. In all good there was a little bad, and in all bad there was a little good. And that obviously opened up the possibilities for the Yetzer Hara, because until then the Yetzer Hara couldn't persuade you to do anything bad. It was obvious, it was clear. It was bad and that was the end of the story. But now in all good there was something bad, and in all bad there's something good. And that mixing up of good and bad is what resulted from the eating of the tree of knowledge. So how did it all happen? How did he come and she come to eat from it? Look at the discussion that takes place. What did God originally say to Odo? In verse 16, Tes Zayin of Perek Beis. Vayetzav Hashem Elokim al ha'odom le'imor. Hashem Elokim instructed Odom saying, Mikol Eitz Hagon Ochol Toichel. Now firstly, the usage of the word Hashem Elokim. Hashem is always used to indicate the God of kindness, of chesed, and of creativity. We talk about creation, that creative drive, the Baal Chesed, the Ribbono Shel Olam, the God of chesed, that's all we use the Yud Kei Vav Kei. Elokim is justice. Hashem decides, he judges, he disciplines, that's Elokim. Vayetzav Hashem Elokim, so we're told that there are two aspects in this tzivui. God in his capacity, both as Hashem and as Elokim, instructs man saying, firstly, Mikol Eitz Hagon Ochel Toichel, you shall surely eat from all the trees of the garden. Umeitz Hadas Toivaro Loi Toichel Mimeno, and from the tree of good and, knowledge of good and bad, you shall not eat. Ki Veyoim Achol Chol Mimeno Mois Tomos, because when you eat from that, you'll be introducing death, and the result of that is that you will die. Why does Hashem tell him, Mikol Eitz Hagon Ochel Toichel, that you shall eat from the trees? Why doesn't he just say, you shall not eat from the tree in the middle of the garden? And then Adam would have known very well but from all the other trees he's free to eat. And this discussion of why God said you should eat from the other trees of the garden is the essence of the discussion that takes place between Adam and between Chava and the snake. This is a fascinating discussion of great lomdus, great technicalities in learning. Let's go through it. This is the way the Chasam Sofer learns it. It's too beautiful. The snake starts off with a strange statement. He says, if we move now to chapter 3, Vayomer Elohisho, and he says to the woman, Afki Amar Elokim lo yisoichlu mikol eitz hagon, did Hashem ever tell you not to eat from any trees? Why does he say that? Says Rashi, Afki Omar Hashem o Amar lachem lo yituichlu mikol, v'afal pi shero'o oisom oichli mishar peiros. Surely the snake saw that they were eating from the other trees. Why did he make that statement? That's the way he started up conversation. Very good way to open up. How do you start conversation with a woman? It's difficult. She's a sneer-sticker woman. What's he going to say to her? Can I buy you a drink? She'll say, mind your own business, and she'll walk off. What? How's he going to happen? We've got to start with her. So he starts with frumkeit. He starts, you know, why are you eating? Didn't Hashem tell you not to eat from the trees? Well, that she's got to answer. She's got to say, nonsense. Of course he said you can eat. So that's a good way to start up. If you're sitting at the bar, then the thing to say to the lady who's sipping a Coca-Cola is, isn't Coca-Cola treif? She won't say, mind your own business. And get up, she'll say, it's not treif. Will I read it? My rabbi says it's okay. And then there's already a discussion going. There he uses. That's his opening line. That's how Rashi learns it. But implied in that lens, the Chasam Sofer is a deeper thing too. He's saying to her, why did God say, you may eat from the trees of the garden? Were they treif before? Why does he have to tell you can? Don't you know you can do that? Surely God only has to tell you what you can't do. Why does he tell you what you can do? He made these trees for you, obviously. Why doesn't he just come along and say, don't eat from the trees? It's hadas. I don't understand that. But for him to go along and say, Mikola eats vashiba bagan, ochel toichel, you may eat from all the others, but not from the one in the middle. Before he said that, wouldn't you have eaten? And if God wouldn't have said that, wouldn't you have eaten? Why does he say, Ochel Teichel? And she says, Vatemir Oishel Anochosh, no, Mipri Eitzagon Noichel. We're allowed to eat from the trees of the garden. Umipri Oitzasher Besoichagon Omar Elokim Loisoichel Bimenu. Hashem said, but only one tree you can't eat from. Veloi Sigu Boy, nor may you touch it. Now that God never said. All God said is don't eat from it, if you remember. God did not say don't touch it. Pentamus, unless you'll die. Where does she get it from? That you can't touch it. Explains the Chasam Sofer. There is a din that on Pesach you shouldn't touch chometz. You shouldn't handle chometz. Asks the Mogen Avraham in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, so why then on Yom Kippur are you allowed to touch food? There isn't a din that on Yom Kippur you're not allowed to touch food. If you're not allowed to touch something that you're not allowed to eat, then on Yom Kippur you shouldn't be allowed to touch food either. Explains the Mogen Avraham that on Yom Kippur you're allowed to touch food because we're not afraid that you'll come to eat it, because you don't eat any food on Yom Kippur. So you know, your mind is off food. And even if you're handling food to give to a child or to a sick person, you're not going to come to eat it yourself, because you know it's out of the question. But on Pesach, where you are busy eating, there's some things you can eat. We're afraid that if you've got chometz in your hand, without thinking, you'll put the chometz in your mouth. So, on Pesach, we're not allowed to do it. Explains the Chasam Sofer, if they weren't allowed to eat any fruit in the garden, which isn't so absurd to think of, because don't forget, at this stage, there was no death. If there was no such thing as death, there was no such thing as illness. If there was no such thing as illness, there was no such thing as starvation. If there was no such thing as starvation, there was no such thing as hunger. So the reason for eating was not hunger before the sin. So that God could have said, don't eat. That you're not allowed to eat in the garden. If that were the case, you would have been allowed to touch any fruit. Because you know you're not allowed to eat. Same as Yom Kippur. But since God said you are allowed to eat, and he in fact says it for that very reason, he says, Mikol priya itasher bagon ochel tuichel. From all the fruit in the tree you may surely eat, only the tree of knowledge you may not eat from. He's teaching us, says Chavo, that not only aren't you allowed to eat from it, you aren't allowed to touch it either, just as on Pesach. In other words, it's clear from the fact that some things you can and some things you can't. Let's take a step back and let's just look at the concept of a gezeira. When the Rabbonim make a gezeira, as we discussed recently in the Shalashuda Shir, when the rabbis make a gezeira, it's not to make life more difficult. When the rabbis make a gezeira, it's in fact to make life easier. And if you look at any of the examples of the gezeiras, you see how they work. You're not allowed to write on Shabbos. The Chachomim say you're not allowed to touch a pen, you're not allowed to move a pen on Shabbos. It's muktzeh. Why do they say that? Why don't they just leave it? If the Torah says you're not allowed to write, why don't they just leave it there? Because it's unnatural to sit with a pencil in your hand or a pen in your hand and not be able to write. It's completely unnatural. Imagine you're busy, you've got a pen in your hand, you're fiddling, you're not allowed to doodle. You've got a pen in your hand, you're busy learning, and you think of something brilliant that you want to remember, you can't write it down. It would be completely unnatural. It's far less unnatural not to touch a pen in the first place. So the Torah tells us what's essentially forbidden. Essentially it's writing that's forbidden. The Chachomim make it easier for us, and they say, but knowing the natural, the way people function naturally, it's easier to stop them picking up a pen altogether than to tell them you can pick up a pen but you can't write with it. That's how the gezeiras work. They put the barrier at the natural point, not at the essential point. And so, on Yom Kippur, there's no reason to say you can't touch food. But on Pesach, there is. It's very difficult to be allowed to touch food, to be allowed to touch chometz and not eat it. So you can be sitting there with a delicious chocolate-covered biscuit, having your tea, and you're holding it in your hand. And you would remember all the time, but I can't eat it. That's ridiculous. It's very hard to do that. Much easier not to touch it, not to have it in your hand in the first place. That's how a gezeira works. Says Chava, from the fact that God says, that you, from everything you can eat, but not from the Eitz Hadas, you see from that, that what he's saying is, and don't even touch the Eitz Hadas, because you're going to come to eat it. Because you're in the business of eating fruit, you're allowed to eat fruit, so don't go and pick it, because you'll touch it. God already, it's not just Odom that gave us that gezeira. God implies by saying you, and that's why he said that you can eat from the other food, to teach us that we should forbid the touching of the tree of knowledge. Now he saw his chance. He saw his opportunity. And he realizes that Chava has said, Loi sig uboi, you shouldn't touch the tree. That's not a necessary gezeira. God never suggested. God suggested you shouldn't touch the fruit. That makes sense. If you're touching the fruit, you might come to eat it. So it's a sensible gezeira. We're not allowed to make nonsensible gezeiras. We're not allowed to make nonsensical gezeiras. Not to touch the tree. Why shouldn't you touch the tree? There's no reason not to touch the tree. Odom told her not to touch the tree. And we'll see why he did that. And the snake knew very well that there was nothing wrong with touching the tree. So he had his chance. But before he can use his chance to the full, he's got to discredit God. He's got to drive a wedge between Chava and the Ribbono Shel Olam. How does he do it? He says you won't die. It's not true. So you want to know why God said don't eat from the fruit? Ki yodea, because God knows, and he leaves out Hashem. Do you see how crafty he is? He doesn't say ki yodea Hashem Elokim. Not the God of wisdom and kindness and creativity. Elokim. This is a vengeful God. Your picture of God, of Hashem Elokim, creative and dynamic and kind, that's not God. You've got the wrong picture. That God is a God that sits way up there. He doesn't communicate with you. That one that communicated with you, he's a bad one, that one. Ki yodei Elokim, because God knows, ki v'yom ha'cholchem mimenu, that when you eat from it, v'nitkichu aneichem, you'll become wise. V'hi yisim ke Elokim, yodei tevero, and you'll become more godly, not less godly. He realizes that intimate knowledge of good and bad will put you in a higher position, not in a lower position. And that's why he told you not to eat it. And the true intention is that you should eat it. And he in fact learns, the way the Chassam Sofer learns it is very beautifully. Sometimes there are two mitzvahs placed alongside one another, a positive and a negative mitzvah. And what it means is that if you do the negative mitzvah, your way out is to thereafter do the positive mitzvah. So if you're not allowed to steal. If you stole, you must return the stolen item. Says the snake, that's what Hashem meant. There are two mitzvahs here. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge. And if you do eat from it, then eat from the other trees and you'll be okay again. So he's opening the way for you to acquire knowledge. That's what it means. It's a lav hanitak le'asei, we call it. It's a negative mitzvah attached to a positive mitzvah. What he really wants you to do is to become wise, and then you can eat from the regular trees and you'll be fine. However, takes a good look at this tree, and it looks appetizing. It doesn't look like a tree that's not meant to be eaten. It looks like fruit that is meant to be eaten. The chisayva hula enayim, and it's so attractive to look at. The nechmod or itzla haskil, and it makes sense that this is a tree that can make you wise. Vatikach mipiryo vateichal, and she eats from it. What happens in the interim? How does she get from step one to step two? So for that, the Ovis de Rabbi Nosson gives us the background, where the snake says, what did that wicked snake do? Omad v'noga be'ilan b'yodo v'v'raglov v'hirtiyo ad shenosh ruperos of loritz. He shook the tree up and the fruit fell down. And he pushed her and made her touch the tree too. She touches the tree and she doesn't feel a great shock. She doesn't die. She doesn't shake up. She doesn't feel a loss of spirituality. Don't forget, on her level, she would sense a loss of spirituality. Of course she doesn't, because God never said don't touch the tree. Nor did God imply that they shouldn't touch the tree of their own accord. So there is absolutely no spiritual reason not to touch the tree, and the snake realizes that. So the snake forces her to touch the tree and says, was that so bad? She says, no. So what's going on? Adam has told her not to touch the tree. The snake says this is a jealous God. And forces her to touch the tree, which she does by mistake, and feels no spiritual consequence from that. What she says, it says the obvious that I've been awesome. Clearly, kol advarim shepikodoni rebi mitchilo shekerhem. V'tishein chava kore lo odom arishin mitchilo ela rebi. She used to call Adam Rebbe. That was her nickname for him. Because he taught her. When she was born, God had already communicated with Adam, and Adam passed that communication on to Chava. So Adam was Chava's Rebbe. And she says, now she questions the validity of everything she's heard from her Rebbe. Everything he's taught me is probably wrong, because he told me not to touch the tree. I've just touched the tree and it was fine. So she doesn't question God. She questions the authority, the authenticity of the Masoris, the way it's been handed down. She says, clearly my Rebbe, my teacher's misleading me. And she eats. She also gives to him to eat. How does he get convinced in the process? He decides that in fact there could be great benefit to eating. The Derech Hashem explains part of the intention of man in the world. And he says in the fourth perek of the first chelek, was part of God's wisdom to organize the world in such a way that even when a man finds himself deep into materialism, through the very involvement in matter, he is able to achieve his shleimus v'isalus el azuch v'lamaylo. He can reach the highest of levels. And from there he can reach the highest levels that are beyond imagination. By turning darkness into light and desolation into energy. So what is the Derech Hashem saying? That there is a greatness in being able to convert. Just as there's a greatness in converting matter into energy, so there's a greatness in converting materialism into spirituality. And so Adam figures out that in fact, if he gets more physical, if he gets more material, if he drops himself, he can uplift the whole world and will play much more of a part in that, in bringing the world to Hashem. Let's examine that for a moment and understand some of the subtleties of what occurred there. Now, Rav Dessler has a very, very subtle approach to this. He tries to analyze what happened to Adam. How did he come to it? How did it occur? The Gemara and the Ovis de Rabbi Nosson, the Gemara in Sanhedrin of Chavtes, criticizes Adam for this gezeira that he gave. The Gemara says, Where do you know that by adding you sometimes detract? So you don't always add. Leave things alone. Shneimar, for it says, Omar Elokim loy toichlu b'menu v'loy sugu boy, because Chava says that God said, don't eat from the tree and don't touch it. And that's not in fact what God said. All God said was don't touch it. Says Rashi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo hizhiro mal hanegia. Hashem didn't tell him not to touch it. Umitoich tesefes giro. And because of this addition, by Adam saying don't even touch the tree, he detracted Shedocha panachas Chava al ha'ilon ad shenoga boy. Because the snake pushed Chava against the tree until she touched it. Omar lo, he said to her, Reish in miso al hanegia. So you see, you didn't die from touching it, so you can eat it also. You see that it isn't that serious. But hadn't that happened? Had Adam told it to her exactly as it was? Had Adam said, God said, don't eat from it. That's all. The snake wouldn't have been able to get that at her. So Adam is criticized for that. What's the criticism? Particularly as the Chasam Sofer learned that God seemed to imply that he wanted there to be some form of gezeirah. Explains the Harav Dessler that sometimes the gezeirah itself might be right. Doing something extra frum might be okay, but it runs the risk of leading to a certain religious arrogance. I'm more religious than anybody else. I don't eat this, and I don't eat that, and I don't do this, and everybody else does, but I don't. Everybody carries an eruv, but I don't carry an eruv. Everybody uses this meat, I use a different meat. It's all very nice, but it runs the risk of introducing what he calls a religious arrogance. And he says there are signs of a touch of this. We can hardly understand the level on which it's operated. It must have been so subtle and so subconscious that there was a touch of arrogance. God says, don't eat. I'm not even going to touch. Not even going to touch. Why did he make that gezeirah, says Rav Dessler? You see, he was worried. He was attracted. There was something exceptionally attractive about this tree. Not just about the look of the tree and the beauty of the tree, but there was something incredibly attractive about becoming more involved in the process. There's something terribly attractive about experiencing evil and choosing not to be evil. There was something incredibly exciting about becoming part of the world and becoming part of sensuality and converting that sensuality into spirituality. Although that wasn't God's will, he realized the attractiveness of it, and he was so attracted to it that he said to himself, I'm not even going to touch this tree. I'm so worried about its attractiveness to me, its intellectual attractiveness, its appeal, the concept of das, of this kind of intimate knowledge with good and evil. My natural intellectual curiosity is such that I know I'll come to eat it. So I'm not even going to touch it. And I'll tell my wife the same, don't touch it. So we see from the gezeirah already how he felt, the enormous pull that this knowledge had for him. And then when he put the gezeirah on, he didn't touch it. He said, I won't touch it, and my wife won't touch it. Says Rav Dessler, there was a touch of frumkeit there. Hashem says, don't eat from it. I don't even touch it. We have a special Isser around here. We don't even touch. Everybody else isn't allowed to eat. We don't even touch. And that, he calls a religious egoism. There's something of the ego in that. And it's that actually brought the downfall. When the snake comes to Chava and starts describing to her what life could be like if she did participate, she begins to realize that there's a place for that ego to manifest itself. There's a place to express itself. And she wants to be part of it, and she convinces him to be part of it, and so they decide to do it. From the Gemara, it seems that the contradiction, the criticism of Adam is not that he said, don't touch the tree. It's just altogether the Lo Yisigu boy, the fact that he made the gzeir on the first place, the fact that he said, don't touch it. And that seems to be from the fact also that he... there might not have been a need to make that gezeirah according to the Gemara. And if we go back to the Chasam Sofer and we say, then why did God say eat from all the other trees? The way Chava learned it was God said eat from all the other trees, but not from the Eitz Hadas. And since you're allowed to eat from the other trees, but not from the Eitz Hadas, you'd better not even touch the fruit of the Eitz Hadas. But in fact, the way it can be learned, the Chasam Sofer brings it earlier on, is when Hashem said Mikol Eitz Hagan Ochel Toichel, that was a mitzvah in itself. He says, I want you to eat from all the other trees. I want you to experience all the other trees. Not because you have to eat for health reasons. As we said, before the sin, there was no question of health. Health was natural. Health was maintained. You didn't have to eat. I want you to eat for the pleasure of it. I want you to eat to uplift the world and to uplift yourselves and to experience all the different tastes and flavors that there are in the world. That's why I want you to eat, says Hashem. It's got nothing to do with the gezeirah. That's a separate thing. Mikol eitz hagan ochel teichel. There's a mitzvah. One mitzvah is you shall eat from the tree, from all the other trees. Another mitzvah is from this tree you shouldn't eat. I want to deal with one other aspect of it before we finish with it. And that is the Orachaim and the Chasam Sofer also bring a chazal that the intention was not that this tree would never be eaten from. The intention was that a few hours later they could eat from it. Which is quite tragic when you think of it. It was Friday afternoon when all this happened. And the intention was that they could eat from it on Shabbos. In fact, one view in Chazal is that this was a vine. And the intention was that they would squeeze the grape juice and they would make Kiddush on the grape juice. So when God said, Lo teichel mimenu, he meant not until Shabbos. And had they just waited until Shabbos before they ate, they would have been able to eat from the Eitz Hadas and everything would have been okay. Let's try and understand the dynamics according to that Chazal. God says don't eat from the tree of knowledge. The snake puts a good argument and says, but the tree of knowledge is a good thing to eat from. And God's just a jealous God, that's why. It's a good, it'll make you clever, it'll make you wise, it'll give you experience, it'll expand you. You'll be much better off. Chava's response to that is, but no. A dogmatic no. God said no. If you eat from it, you'll die. The snake pushes her against it and she doesn't die. That breaks down her whole religious basis for not eating from the tree. What could have happened and what should have happened? And here we have a different understanding of what the sin was. Adam should have said to himself, let me take you a step back. What would have happened had they not eaten from the tree, or had they eaten from the tree on Shabbos? Would we have been given the Torah later on? Probably not. We probably wouldn't have been given the Torah. Because Adam would have been able to work out the whole Torah himself, as Avram and Yitzhak and Yaakov did. They worked out the Torah. The Torah can be rationally projected, it can be rationally worked out. And it seems clear that at Matan Torah, when Hashem gave us the Torah, it was to bring us back to the situation we were before the sin. Implying that if there wasn't a sin, we wouldn't have got the Torah. On the other hand, you'll remember that when Hashem says to Adam, it says he put him in the garden, la'ovda u'la'shomro, he put him in the garden to protect it. And we pointed out that that was in the feminine, not in the masculine. Whereas it should have been in the masculine. The garden is masculine, and so we learned l'ovda l'shomro doesn't mean to guard and to protect the garden, but it means to guard and protect the Torah. The Chazal brought. What does it mean to keep the Torah? That means there was a concept of learning the Torah, of keeping the Torah. What kind of Torah was there? There was one mitzvah: don't eat from the tree. And according to the Chazal now, that we're saying, even that was only a mitzvah for that Friday. Don't eat from the tree until Shabbos. That's all it was. Tonight you can eat from the tree. How from that is he going to work out the whole Torah? What could have happened? If Adam had started analyzing and said, you know, I'm not allowed to eat from the tree. What is this tree? It's a tree of knowledge. Why would God make knowledge treif? Knowledge is surely expansive. Surely knowledge is good. Why would God make knowledge treif? Number one. And number two, why would God make the tree of knowledge, which is treif, so very beautiful? To look so good, to smell so good, to feel so good. Why would he make it so attractive if it's so bad? So he would need to come to the conclusion that the tree of knowledge is not permanently forbidden. Can't be that God never wants me to eat from it. So what must it be that he doesn't want me to eat from it until Shabbos? Why not? What's the difference between Shabbos and the weekdays? He would have to ask himself. Well, what will happen once he eats from the tree of knowledge? Once he eats from the tree of knowledge, he starts developing the ability to reason. He develops the ability to question. He develops the ability to find gray areas. That's really what we said the tree of knowledge introduces. It introduces gray areas. Until Shabbos, it's black and white. Once he would eat from the tree of knowledge, gray areas are introduced. If he would eat on Shabbos, the fact that his first experience of the gray areas would be on Shabbos, he would be able to cope with that. He would be able to handle that. over there, but I think it is Rak Lutolis Atzmoiboy. A father doing good for his son, his intention is only for his own good. Says Hashem to Adam, Shabbos provides you with such a framework. On Shabbos you can think. On Shabbos you're taken away from the world. On Shabbos you're given a clear framework, the things you do, the things you don't do. On Shabbos you can start a logical thinking process. But don't try and go through that thinking process when you're in the midst of absolute engagement with the world. Very important thing to do. What do businessmen do when they want to plan their strategies? They go off to the bush somewhere. They don't sit in their offices. You can't think when you're surrounded by your day-to-day concerns. And that's what Shabbos is for. Shabbos is thinking day. Shabbos is a day where we go into the bush. Except you don't have to go physically into the bush. You can go mentally into the bush. You detach yourself from all the urgencies that make it impossible to think clearly. Once those urgencies are there, that's what Shabbos is for. Shabbos is not a day of doing nothing. Shabbos is not a day of detachment. Shabbos is a day to detach you from those things that make it impossible to extract yourself from a situation and to think objectively. Shabbos is a time you can take a look at your life, you can take a look at your week, you can take a look at yourself, at your relationships, figure out where they're going, what's doing, how to readjust them next week to make it better than last week. That's what Shabbos is for. When you're in Shabbos, you can eat from the tree of knowledge. When you're in Shabbos, you can afford to think, you can afford to analyze, you can afford to question, you can deal with gray areas. And once you've done it on Shabbos and you've started off the right way, you'll be all right. But don't start off on a Friday afternoon starting to think. That's not the time to start thinking and planning and looking at gray areas. Then you get yourself into Shabbos first. So had Adam reasoned it out, so to say, and had he done so with Chava, the snake wouldn't have had a chance. There was a certain dogmatism to the way Adam decided to do this. He was so worried, he was so full of fear, that the attraction of the thinking of process would bring him to eat from the tree, that he dealt with it dogmatically. God said, no, don't eat, I'm saying don't even touch, and if you do, you're dead, that's the end of the story. And he thought he was safe with that. And we see right over here, you're not safe with that. You need the gezeiros, it's fine. But there has to be a thinking context as well. There has to be a questioning context. There has to be some kind of attempt to understand the thinking behind it, to understand the reasoning behind it. The two together give us the security in what we're doing. If there's an understanding and there's a structure, the two together make it a little easier to resist the temptations that are put before us. But if it's only structure and there's no reasoning, or it's only reasoning and there's no structure, it becomes very difficult to do so. And so that's quite tragic, that just for a few minutes or for a few hours of delay, all the tragedy that came into the world afterwards, and we'll see next week some of the consequences of the eating of this tree, how it affected man, how it affected woman, how it affected the force of the snake, that drive of sensuality, exactly what happened. In the process of the eating, by the way, this was not just a simple process in this relationship between the snake and Chava. This was a total seduction of Chava. Not just a seduction to eat from the tree, but Chazal teach us that there was some form of relationship between the snake and Chava too. What it is, it's very difficult for us to understand, bearing in mind that the snake was a force of sensuality and that she was a human being and an energetic human being, and yet there was some form of physical contact, some form of sexual contact between these two forces, so that the sensuality of the snake is now incorporated into Chava. This becomes part of her new persona. Chava is now no longer that pure spiritual being that she was. She's now a spiritual being that has incorporated elements of physical sensuality. And that's why I said to you 2 weeks ago that while there was sexuality prior to the chet, there wasn't sensuality in Adam and Chava. Now we have introduced the element of sensuality as well, where there is the capacity to find ecstasy in something which is totally non-spiritual, where there is the capacity to find ecstasy in something which is bad, in something which is negative, in something which is destructive. That didn't exist before. Before, the only ecstasy that existed was spiritual ecstasy, the ecstasy of good, the ecstasy of tov, the ecstasy of godliness. And now for the first time we have incorporated into one being the capacity for ecstasy outside of the framework of things spiritual. And what impact that has on Adam, and what impact that has on Chava, and what impact that has on life and on the relationship between man and woman, we'll see as we develop through the parasha next week. Is a supplier, and as much as it suits me as a consumer.